Technorama episode 649, Going Back to Basic.
Wait, you messed up the title.
What?
Not going back to basic.
Oh, go back to basic. Then what you needed to do, it's not my fault. BASIC is an acronym for Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code.
Correct.
Knucklehead, yes. You didn't have it in uppercase.
Oh, God. I'm calling Grammar Girl and see if that will work or not. If that's
no,
acceptable.
She'll say, please don't. You have too many words that you use that I don't understand. Because she's got that segment now about those family terms. Do you have any of those? Where like your family says words and nobody else understands them?
I have one. I've been meaning to send one to her. And I'll tell you right now if you want to hear it.
Sure.
All right. So for a long time in my family, I know this, you know, there's me, my brother, and my dad. So there's three guys and my mom. So when we were at the table or something, somebody would burp. Dad would say, Duroc. And then one of us would respond, pig. Well, I thought Duroc was a made up word for a long time. And then the last several years, you know, recent memory, I looked up online, Duroc.
Yes.
It's a red feral pig. I went, oh, it's a real word. I thought it was a made up word.
So they're burping and you're just really just saying, you pig.
Yeah.
But right. Instead of saying pig, they're saying it'd be like saying razorback.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I had no idea that it was a real thing for like 40 years. You know, I'm like, oh, Duroc, you know.
Duroc, yeah, man, woo!
Yeah. Okay. Duroc and Jalad on the one.
Duroc and Jalad at the dinner table.
That's right. Anyway. So can you tell him, Giddy, I'm ready for Dragon Con?
We have some that are based on words that our kids said when they were learning to speak. So the one that comes to mind is when we're in the kitchen or something, you need to get past somebody. We'll say, Hunzi hickus tea, which is something Julie said when she still had a pacifier in her mouth. We were playing this game and dancing around the coffee table, but the Christmas tree was sticking out. And it was her way of saying, excuse me, Christmas tree. It just came out as Hunzi hickus tea.
That's funny.
So anytime someone's in our way, it's like, excuse me, Christmas tree, but the way an 18-month-old would say it,
right.
With a pacifier in her mouth.
That's funny.
There's a few of them that way.
Yeah, I think I remember a couple in our family when my brother was young, and he had not a lisp, but he would mess up a couple of words like that. I think I can't remember them all, but
Amy put one in the chat. We have a couple: big teen screevy, which is a spoonerism for big screen TV, or silouted trees. I don't know how to pronounce silhouette as a small child, but it made my best guess.
Nigga, not too bad. That's funny.
I'm sure more will come to mind as you just go through your daily life. It was a bit like when Scott Reynolds and I were talking yesterday, and I said, next Friday, I'm going to be presenting to the group in India on basic Unix commands. And I said, check me on this, Scott, because I'm just going through things I've used in the last 48 hours. And he said, he gave me a few ideas, but it was one of those, you just kind of got to keep your radar on for words like that, or in my case, keep your radar on for Unix commands like that. And they jump out at you. There's more of them than you may think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Anyway, welcome to Technorama.
Yeah.
Hello. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek, and sometimes invades other podcasts. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. And if you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and discussing all things linguistics tonight is Craig Stepp. Let's see how many things we can tie into Grammar Girl's podcast.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I got another one.
Oh, go ahead. Why not?
So, all right. So we're driving. I was driving. Yeah, me and Kim and I, my wife, we were driving home one day, and I saw this sign. It was for a farm, like a strawberry farm or peaches or something.
Yes.
And then we drove by it, and they had a sign that says, y'all come back. But it was Y A apostrophe L-L.
Oh, no, yeah.
I said you spelled it wrong. They spelled it wrong.
Kim's like, apostrophe goes between the Y and the A.
Yeah. Kim said, no, I think it's right. I think you can do it that way, too. I was like, no. It's for you all.
Right.
Not, why would you, there's nothing to take out in the all part. Why would you, so.
No, their version of it means you all will. Like, I'll is I apostrophe L-L.
Or maybe a little bit.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, but so in the car, I pulled up Grammar Girl, and there she was. She had a whole show, of course, about y'all, and then she threw out the you all, which I've used that before too.
Well, my sister did that one parody of it like years and years and years ago. The difference between all and all y'all.
Yeah, there's an all y'all, which is a you all or y'all is like two or three people. All y'all is three or more.
Plural. Now, I don't think it actually has any quantifiable amount. It's whoever chooses to use it and whenever they choose to use it.
Well, she did say, and which is kind of what I was getting at, was is a smaller group as opposed to a larger group.
All right, let's do our feedback question of the week, because I don't know that we even had one. Oh, we did, and we got some comments.
Yeah.
I mean, we got some letters. We get letters every day.
Hey.
Mailman today. Reach right in and pull one out.
Haven't we used this one before?
Letters. I love those letters.
What is a fact that's real but sounds completely fake?
Oh boy.
I think we used this question before.
This was last week's question, so I don't think we used it last week.
I thought we asked what's something you believe that nobody agrees with or something. Or everybody thinks something that you don't agree with.
I don't know. We had so many questions. I don't remember.
Yeah, you've had so many questions on your Dog Days podcast, and then Mad Marv is answering them out of sequence. I can't keep anything straight anymore.
Oh, is he answering my questions?
Well, yeah.
Oh, maybe I need to go back and listen. I've kind of missed a few days, so now I'm way behind.
Loser. The challenge is to keep up with all the podcasts, and I'm doing a mighty fine job.
I was doing good. Actually, you know, the trick was, well, one strategy I was using was I would queue up, like, for example, yours. I would queue up five in a row and then listen to them all straight. And then I would go pull up somebody else, listen to them all straight. And I don't know. I was just playing around with a different strategy. I don't think I was getting anywhere faster. Just trying something.
John Miller Jr. says, would you two stop before the legion of deceased English teachers rises up out of the graves? That's, you know, when I first heard the movie Dead Poets Society, I envisioned something like that.
Right.
We can make a remake, a horror movie about the Dead Poet Society. All right. Our question as we were babbling about is, what is a fact that's real but sounds completely fake? Lone Guy's Knight says, the platypus has a beak, fur, lays eggs, and is venomous, still technically a mammal.
Yeah. Well, speaking of John Miller Jr., he says, seahorses are the only species that... Oh, for a minute, I was like, wait a minute, isn't that what you just read? No, seahorses are the only species in the animal kingdom where the male carries and gives birth to the young.
Yep.
Bonus. He always throws his bonus in here. If you twist an owl's head, 540 degrees, it will pop right off.
Don't want to know how you know that.
Yeah, I know.
And owls don't have knees is what Steve Lennon puts in underneath that. And then he responds back, I usually have an answer to these questions, but today I don't.
Right.
See more. Unbelievable, but true. Hey, there's an unbelievable fact.
Yeah, that's right.
What's a fact that's real but sounds completely fake? Steve London doesn't have an answer for this week's question.
We actually know what we're doing for podcasting. There's an unbelievable fact.
My answer to what's something everybody believes that... No, what? How did you phrase that? What's a... It was the question recently. What's something you believe that no one else does, or something everybody believes that you don't, or it was something along those veins.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you disagree with?
Mm-hmm.
Mine has to do with caffeine. You don't need caffeine.
Okay. I didn't say I need it. I just drink it.
All the time.
No, not all the time. I have two cups.
You can live just fine without caffeine. Yeah. Snooze alarms are for the weak.
I've said this before. Harrison's quote from when he was like 8. He said naps are for losers.
When do you get to be our
quitters?
Age,
I'm sorry. Naps are for quitters. That was it. Naps are for quitters.
He just was trying to talk you out of making him take a nap.
Yeah, right. Well.
That's the end of that segment. That means we get to do history next. Wow, those songs almost went together.
Yeah.
On this day in history for September 1st, 2021, because that's when the show comes out in podcast form, it's the 244th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 121 days remaining. Is that 12D1? Yes, that would be 12D1 days remaining in 2021. It's getting tongue twister time. On this date in 1804 that Juno, Craig's dog, one of the largest asteroids in the main belt, was discovered by the German shepherd astronomer Carl Ludwig Harding. I was listening to your podcast recently.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure to let her know. Huh? Yeah. I'll make sure to let Juno know that you brought it up. Anyway, 143 years ago today, Emma Nutt became the world's first female telephone operator. And when she was recruited by Alexander Graham Bell to the Boston Telephone Dispatch Company.
Little known fact, whenever somebody gets the wrong number, you go, ah, nuts. That's an homage to Emma Nutt. I kid you not.
Oh, that's another unbelievable fact.
Well-known fact. Wow, we are giddy tonight, but this is making it really fun.
Yeah.
It was also on this date in 1934 that the first Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer animated cartoon, The Discontented Canary, was released to movie theaters. I watched this on YouTube recently. That's a fun
I didn't think about cartoon. Going out and look.
Yeah. A lot of singing in there.
Okay. All right, so it was 69 years ago today that The Old Man and the Sea, the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Ernest Hemingway, was first published.
Ah, The Old Man and the Sea. I'm going to get around to reading that one of these days.
One of these days.
On September 1st, 1972, in Reykjavik, Iceland, American Bobby Fischer beat Russian Boris Spassky to become the world t-shirt folding champion. No, the chess champion.
They were competing in the wrong contest.
Bobby Fischer t-shirt folding.
47 years ago today, the SR-71 Blackbird sets and holds the record for flying from New York to London in the time of 1 hour and 54 minutes and 56.4 seconds.
I wish you could get to London in under 2 hours.
Yeah, right. At a speed of 1,435.587 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. It was on this date in 1979 that American space probe Pioneer 11 became the first spacecraft to visit Saturn when it passed the planet at a distance of 21,000 kilometers or 13,000 miles.
And 39 years ago today, the United States Air Force Space Command was founded.
Space Command! It was 36 years ago today that a joint American-French expedition located the wreckage of the RMS Titanic. Dr. Robert Ballard was aboard.
Wow. 36 years ago today. I remember when they did that.
1985 is when they found it. 1986 is when they went down and explored it and made the National Geographic special.
Now, that, I remember seeing that because they put some pictures out.
They had to keep that under their hat for like 8 months or so.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday goes out in the state to German organist, composer, and educator Johann Taco Bell. He's the one who has that famous tune that everybody uses. Craig? Take your sign down that says recording paused.
What is that?
I don't know. You just put that up there. People on the live stream are now seeing. You should just have one that permanently says your internet connection is unstable.
Wait a second here.
Johann Taco Bell was born on this date in 1653.
And let me turn my camera back on. There we go.
Keep reading.
All right. English chemist and physicist, Nobel Prize laureate. Francis William Aston was born 144 years ago today.
Where are we? You got me all. German engineer and designer invented the human-powered aircraft. Glad we don't have those anymore. Everybody on the 727, pedal faster! Engelbart Zoschka was born in the state in 1895.
It took us five humans to get here. from New York to London in an hour.
Talk about your spin class.
It took us five humans to get to New York from New York to London
and
in the
boy, are my legs
hours.
Tired.
So born September 1st, 1922 Canadian American actress and singer Yvonne DiCarlo.
That's Lily Munster.
Yes, it is.
American actress, comedian, screenwriter, and producer Lily Tomlin, and that's the truth, was born on this date in 1939.
And also born on that same date in 1946, Manx English singer-songwriter and producer Barry Gibb.
You should be dancing, yeah. Cuban-American singer-songwriter and actress Gloria Estefan was born on this date in 1957.
I've seen her
everybody,
in concert.
Everybody do the conga.
That's right. American captain, pilot, and astronaut Christopher Ferguson is 60 today.
And also turning 55 is American video game designer, co-founder of Irrational Games, Ken Levine. Hello, Scott Tyler, joining us in the chat. You guys keep breaking the internet. The poor Cisco router can't keep up. Are we almost done with this? Oh, listener birthdays. On September 1st, David Klemkin. September 2nd, Scott Tyler. September 5th, Ben Vaughn. And September 6th, Susan Murph. We've celebrated with some of these people at DragonCon in person, and we look forward to doing that again this year. Now the ending music comes up. That's the way it was on this day in history for September 1st and the week of September 1st, 2021. Take us out, band. We are on target tonight. If you want to get your birthday on the birthday calendar, you go over to chuckchat.com/birthday. Put it in there. We'll give you the shout out at the appropriate time of year. The URL again, in case you missed it the first time around, is chuckchat.com/birthday. Ooh, almost in a Shatner-esque voice. Okay, that means we have news, so random blue button.
Good news, anyone?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Someone is trying to build a Star Trek impulse engine for interstellar travel.
Say it isn't so. Wait, impulse?
Yeah.
I thought you needed warp to do interstellar travel. Otherwise, it's going to take you years.
Well, it maybe cut down a little bit. Yeah, not a whole lot. Anyway, so have you ever heard of the phrase that life imitates art? Well, two scientists are out to prove that science is not exempt, or at least it shouldn't be. Taking a cue from Star Trek, scientists Dr. Hal Fearn and Dr. Jim Woodward are attempting to build an impulse engine to make interstellar travel possible.
They can run our podcast, our other podcast, the podcast that runs on impulse power.
Yeah, we need somebody to, you know, make that happen. So the Star Trek universe impulse engines are used to provide high thrust for a short period to break out of orbit or of a planet or a moon, which also speeds up the interstellar travel and allows the team to boldly go where no man has gone before. No person has gone before. Without that, we probably wouldn't have a Star Trek franchise or millions of space dreaming fans. It is accrued. But sadly, space travel is eons beyond the science sci-fi franchise.
And budget.
According to Fearn, it will take about 15 to 16,000 years to travel to Earth's nearest star. So unless real vampires are roaming the world, I'm sure we're
keep reading.
It's doubtful that interstellar travel will be reachable during any human's lifetime. Okay. In a YouTube video channel, Bloomberg Quick Takes, Fearn and Woodward propose using mock effect gravity assist drive to cut interstellar travel time down to within human lifetime. So you can get there just in time to, I'm here.
I was born in Boston in the year 2114.
I die here in orbit.
Just barely got to Alpha Centauri.
Beetlejuice.
No, that's too far away.
So the Mega Drive, as it is best known, I guess that's to get around copyrights, relies on some controversial physics. Mach's principle has some interpretations.
I am now Craig's interpreter for the word interpretation. How meta can you get on this podcast?
It has been a long day. I'm sorry. But Fearn is specifically focused on one, the principle in which distant matter can, I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the stupid word.
You can tap out and, you know,
Anyway, so go watch the video. They explain how the mega drive works. It's like an electric toothbrush, he says.
All right, I'll take the next story then from Vox.com. Oh, it's a story about air conditioning, because good luck. I mean, good timing. Tomorrow, I'm having some air conditioning installed in the studio.
Oh, I'm curious to see how you find it when you get it installed.
Yeah, it's about 15 years overdue. Should have came with the house, but we won't.
I blame Michael.
I blame Michael, too.
Yeah.
But, right. You know, he left me a lot of stuff, but, you know, there's still projects to do. And there's sure more changes in effect. This may be one of the last podcasts you see this particular background behind me. But what if the most American symbol of unsustainable consumption isn't the automobile, but the air conditioner, or aircon, as they call it in some countries? In cool indoor spaces, it's easy to forget that billions of people around the world don't have cooling, and that air conditioning is worsening the warming that it's supposed to protect us from. Oh, yikes. There are alternatives. We can build public cooling spaces in smarter cities with fixes like white paint and more greenery. Some experts have hailed heat pump technology as a more efficient option. But as the planet warms and more of its inhabitants have spare income, AC sales are increasing. 10 air conditioners will be sold every second for the next 30 years, according to the United Nations estimate. Access to air conditioning can literally mean life or death for the young, elderly, and those with medical conditions such as compromised immune systems. The rise of AC, it has an enormous cost. Over time, chemicals known as refrigerants leak out of the AC units that accelerate climate change. They're not supposed to be using those kind anymore, like for the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah, they've switched over a long time ago.
Yeah, no non-CFC coolants.
Yeah, because I remember I had to, having a problem with my air conditioner in my car, and I was going to get the stuff to, you know, to recharge it.
But.
Nope.
International treaties have tried to fix this. In 1987, the Montreal Protocol banned the production of chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. Did I just say that? That were rapidly depleting the ozone layer and damaging forests and croplands. The typical narrative is that scientists sounded the alarm, the world came together, and set binding targets for phasing out the chemicals. In doing so, we averted a catastrophic threat to life on Earth. Woohoo! We did it once. We can do it again with global warming. The chemicals that replace CFCs are called hydrofluorocarbons. While HFCs don't deplete the ozone, they are powerful heat-trapping greenhouse gases. Oh, darn it!
Oh, drat, these HFCs. They're so bothersome.
Phasing out HFCs, which are thousands of times more powerful than carbon dioxide, is one of the most critical actions the world can take this decade to curb climate change. Earlier this year, the United States belated signed the 2016 Kigali Amendment, which extends the Montreal Protocol to almost entirely phase out HFCs over the next 30 years. Oh, man, we are just making things worse for ourselves by trying to make things better for ourselves.
It's right.
Not working. So head over to the show notes on episode 649.
Wow.
Okay. That's the one. Chuckchat.com/technorama.
I don't feel a day over 648.
That means the next one we do at DragonCon is going to technically be 650. 650.
And you know, if you go back in our archives, there's a ton more that are out of this numbering system that we did. There's a lot of
interviews,
stuff you can go
specials,
back and listen to.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interviews, all that good stuff.
I said interviews and specials.
Oh, did you? I didn't hear the interviews.
Okay. All right. We want to give a shout out to the chat room because we do the show on Sunday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time when we are around on Facebook and YouTube. So go and join our page. Let's see. Do we have anybody on YouTube at the moment? We do. We got a couple out there. Thank you very much for watching that. Nobody said any comments yet, so I don't know who you are. Can't give you a shout out, but we can give a shout out to the people that have said something on Facebook. And I feel like this is the part about Romper Room. We have Eric Miller and John Miller Jr., Clinton Alvord, Amy Bowen, a lot of our people that we're going to be announcing in just a second. Scott Tyler. And hello, everybody else who has either watched partially or all the way through. Thank you for joining us. It's a lot of fun. Makes the show a lot more fun. Your comments embiggen the show.
Yes.
9:30 Eastern Time on Facebook and YouTube on Sunday nights, which brings us to this part. Yes, that music means it's time to go to the Wayback Machine, where we have Remember When. And go for it, Craig.
All right. So scientists in Egypt have identified a new species of four-legged whale.
Yes.
Imagine that for a second. That lived around 43 million years ago. So the fossil of the amphibious
Phaeomycetus.
Yeah, Phaeomycetus.
If it ends with cetus, it's whale-ish.
Anubis. Anubis.
Anubis.
Anubis.
As in the Egyptian god.
Yes.
Phaeomycetus Anubis. That's a great band name. I might have to if we reach the word interpretation again.
Well, it was discovered in Egypt's western desert.
Hey, Grammar Girl would be very proud of you that you needed an interpreter for the word interpretation.
I'm going to hire her one day. So its skull resembles that of an Anubis, the ancient Egyptian jackal head god of the dead, after which it was named.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's what it says. The ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals that lived on land over the course of 10 million years.
I heard more wolf-like animals. Wolf and deer aren't that jackals, much alike.
Jackals, you mean?
No, whales. So whales started on land, and then they went back into the water.
Yeah, they said, heck with this.
one of the breeds, Ambulocetus, means walking whale, because it had legs, but it went in the water.
That's interesting. Weighing an estimated 600 kilograms and 3 meters and like 10 feet in length, the
Phaeomycetus Anubis.
Yeah, Phaeomycetus
Anubis. I'll just dub it in.
had strong jaws to catch prey, according to a study by the Proceedings of the Royal Society B.
You have to read that part with an English accent. The Proceedings of the Royal Society B.
They're not good enough to be Society A on Wednesday. Anyway, so the whale was able to walk on land and swim in water. The partial skeleton was found in Egypt's Fayum Depression and analyzed by scientists in Mansoura University. Although the area is now desert, it was once covered by sea and is rich source of fossils.
Yes. In fact, a lot of the northern Egypt and Sahara was very much oceanic, as was where the Tibetan
here,
mountain range, the
Appalachian,
the Himalayans.
Yeah, Appalachians, there's shells and fossils all over the mountains.
The Himalayans used to be a sea called the Tethys until India ran into Asia. How rude of it. I'm still waiting for the insurance claim on that thing. But subcontinent collides with continent. Nobody wants to ensure that. And then, of course, all the things that fell to the bottom of the ocean over the millions and millions of years are now thousands of feet in the air. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the Phaeomycetus anubis is a key new whale species and a critical discovery for Egyptian and African paleontology. The study lead author, Abdullah Gohar, told Reuters and news agency. And while it is not the first time a fossil of a whale with legs has been found, the Phaeomycetus anubis is believed to be the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale to be discovered in Africa.
In Africa. Note that, because there were other ones in Asia. Because I said, this sounds an awful lot like Ambulocetus. But yeah, hey, I study science-y stuff. I like whales.
Well, I didn't realize, actually, to be honest with you, I never realized that whales had legs.
Mm-hmm. Cool story. Go watch specials on that stuff if you want some good science-y stuff. All right. That means it's time to march on to this orange button. Woo! The Patreon music! Rocking out! Do you rock? He totally missed it.
What'd I do?
I said, do rock?
Oh, do rock.
This show is brought to you by you. Thank you to our patrons who enable us to keep this show going. Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman. Oh, I wish we could see all these people and give them a great big hug, of course, with masks and vaccinations at DragonCon. Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Yorga Shrawin. We love you all. Woo! Yeah. Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London. I'm going to have to say it that way from now on. Thank you, all of you. You go over to the Patreon page, and if you're watching the live stream now, you see that on the bottom of the page. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. If you're listening, let me say it for you again, just so you don't miss it. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast for as little as a dollar show. These people not only get their name sung to them sometimes with some clever made-up names or pronunciations.
Yeah, we make up names for people all the time.
But we also get a special episode where Craig and I do some behind the scenes, you know, like after the rock concert, you get to go be backstage with that. That's what they get. They get this backstage conversation with us, you know, not where we're, you know, drinking and making out with scantily clad women. That never happens on this podcast. But if you want to imagine that's what happens on the Patreon podcast.
It's like one of those things like what podcasters think they look like and what podcasters actually look like.
Kind of like karaoke, yeah. What you think you sound like when you sing karaoke.
Yeah, that's right. Like Elvis or something. Yeah, yeah. And then what I really look like.
Trust me, I've been doing enough of that to know. If you thought it was bad listening to your voice when you first start a podcast, karaoke takes it to a whole nother level when you record it. Anyway, I'm going to bring that music down and stop that. Thank you once again to our Patreon people, patreon.com/Technorama Podcast, which brings us to, we're in the Geek Library already? Did we miss something?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I thought I had something for Pass the Remote. We are making our way through Outlander. We're about halfway through season 3. Good series, by the way. But you can tell a woman wrote this. There is a lot of sex. There is a lot of emotion. There is a lot of good acting. But unlike many shows, I think one of the things that I really like about this is that they don't rely on lies and secrets to keep the plot moving along. There's so many shows, like, you wouldn't have any show if you just told the truth. Well, this one, they do tell the truth, and they still have quite the show. All right. So that's
where,
it for
Outlander. Where can you see that at?
Outlander is on Netflix.
Netflix, all right.
Netflix. All right. Good show.
I didn't really watch much. Well, it seems like I've been watching. Well, I'll tell you what I have been watching.
Star Trek, to study for our panel at DragonCon, for the topic is Trek, because we are playing a game there where we could end up having to defend or prosecute, the game is called Shuttle Potter Airlock, any one of five characters. So five characters, two different situations. We have to be prepared for 10 arguments on these five characters. So we've been watching a lot of TNG, a lot of DS9, an occasional movie here and there, going, okay, what if you're asked to throw Garak out of a airlock? What is your argument?
Oh, no, and I got to defend him.
I thought this was just going to be like a monologue, but no, if I'm defending Garak and, you know, Craig and Clinton can come at me with arguments. Either it's like, So,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm ready for that kind of pressure.
I don't know if I'm ready, period, but I'm gonna give it a shot.
I can't find anything good to say about some of these characters.
I know. There's a couple. You want to name names? Garak was one.
How do you, there's nothing, I can't find anything bad to say about Rin. He didn't do anything wrong, in my opinion.
Well, his time was also short-lived. It's not like we really saw a whole lot of him other than that one season.
Thing he did wrong, and that was hold a secret for a little long, and then they found it out anyway. Like, anyway. So let's move on to the Geek Library, which I believe is it the gray button? No, that's Media Corner. It's the green one. Don't worry. As smooth as this is going, we're going to be changing it all up soon. So we're going to have lots more technical difficulties.
I hope your new mixer has reverb.
I've already put that in place.
Wait, you already got your mixer?
Yes, it's right here.
Oh, I I thought it was delayed. I didn't think you were...
It was supposed to be here Tuesday, but it came in 2 days early. So I was supposed to be packing for Dragon Con today, but I spent like 4 hours studying this, the basics of this thing.
Yes, and they're reading the manual.
Well, lots of YouTube videos. There's a wonderful young man who does nothing but, I swear he does nothing but this mixer. And he's been doing it for about 8 years.
You know, can we just for a moment appreciate the resource that YouTube can be?
Yes.
You know, for learning something new or staying informed. I mean, I don't know how many times I've looked at how to do something in my car, and there's somebody doing it on the exact same model. Watch it, and I go out there looking like a pro, you know, knock it out. It's pretty cool.
Well, and there's also the benefit. There's a double-edged sword with that, though. This mixer's been out for about 8 years, so there are a lot of resources. But some of them that are 8 years old are using older firmware. And we go, that's not what my screen looks like.
Oh, yeah.
So
you have to kind of stretch your imagination a little bit and say, oh that setting's over here, you know, or something, you know, kind of work around it in your head.
All right, let's go on to the Geek Library. Why are hyperlinks blue?
Why? Why not?
Because their wife died. I don't know.
What if they were white, we wouldn't be able to see them.
Well, in the old days, the background was gray.
That's true.
So let me tell you a story. The internet
sit
is
right back in your hear a tale.
Tale of a faithful link started on this very podcast as narrated by a twink. Okay, the internet has... Don't get me started on that kind of stuff. Got to remember, I've been doing this before Weird Al.
Right.
Didn't do very good at it, apparently.
Right.
The internet has ingrained itself into every aspect of our lives, but there's one aspect of the digital world that I bet you take for granted. Did you ever notice that many links, specifically hyperlinks, are blue? Except in Evernote. We won't talk about that right now. When a coworker casually asked me, Daddy, why are links blue? I was stumped. As a user experience designer who has created websites since 2001, kids, I've always made my links blue. I have actually made all mine white on the dark theme of karaoke app, but that's a different story. I have advocated for a specific shade of blue and for the consumption application of blue. Yes, I've never stopped and wondered, why are links blue? It's like, why is the sky blue? Well, it has to do with the thing called Raleigh scattering. That's what you should use, and that's why are links blue. It has to do with Raleigh scattering. See, when the light of the sun hits the nitrogen in the atmosphere, it makes your links blue.
What is nitrogen, Daddy?
It was just a fact of life. Grass is green and hyperlinks are blue. Culturally, we associate links with the color blue so much that in 2016, when Google changed its links to black, scandalous! Stock market collapsed.
Right.
It created quite a disruption, to say the least.
Where do I click? You know.
But now we have one application when we're uploading our video files to our external production team. The submit button is gray, light gray, and it looks disabled. And we've been giving them crap about this, and nobody ever goes and fixes it.
You know, grays were a problem early on with LCD monitors, you know, panels, because they... The color representation wasn't quite as good as it is now. But if you had gray stuff on the screen, I have people complain, I can't see where to click.
Or if you,
I'm like, come on.
If your LCD is tilted just the wrong way.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Yeah, the LCDs weren't good as they are now.
Well, he says, but now I found myself consumed by the question, why are links blue? Honey, where are my pants? Where's my super suit?
Right.
Who decided to make them blue? When was the decision made, and how has this decision made such a lasting impact? These are the things that we really want to know. Well, I turned to my coworkers to help me research, and we started to find the answer. Mosaic. An early browser released by Mark Andreessen and Eric Bina on January 23rd, 1993, had blue hyperlinks. Well, that's because Lynx was a text editor, and it just didn't matter. Well, to truly understand the origin and evolution of hyperlinks, though, I took a journey through technology, history, and interfaces to explore how links were handled before color monitors, and how interfaces and hyperlinks rapidly evolved once color became an option. The ancestors of the blue hyperlink. By looking at these pre-color hyperlink solutions, we can see how hyperlinks evolved over time and how these early innovations impact usability on the web today.
1964, Project Xanadu. In his stately manner at Xanadu. Anyway,
Project Xanadu connected two pages of information for the first time in history. Links were visual lines between pages.
1983,
Hypertize system. This system introduced color as it used cyan hyperlinks in black background. Hyperties were used as an electric journal. This may be an ancestor of our blue hyperlink we know and, quote, love today. But I do not believe that this is the first instance of a blue hyperlink since this color is cyan, not dark blue. 1985.
Windows 1.0.
Windows brought full color graphic interface. Ooh, with really bold, obnoxious colors.
Full color is more like four colors.
Faux color.
Faux color.
The links and buttons are still black, similar to Apple's interface at the time. You think?
I wonder why. Gee.
What I do find interesting, however, is this is the first instance of our dark blue used in a layout. The dark blue is heavily used in the headings and on the borders around modals, formerly known as pop-up windows. Another interesting thing about Windows 1.0 is it still appears in modern websites is the underlined hyperlink. This is the first example of an underline being used to indicate a hyperlink that I have been able to find. To make Windows 1.0 even more interesting, we see the introduction of a hover state, the hallmarks of a modern interaction design. We're alive and well in 1985. Ooh. So if you hovered over it, it would like change the background.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Go, okay, I can interact with it.
We didn't have a tooltip yet. 1987's HyperCard, released by the Apple for the Macintosh. This program used hyperlinks between pages and apps. While aesthetically beautiful, this version did not use color in its hyperlinks. Because in 87, color on a Mac just wasn't a thing yet.
It was still grayscale, for the most part.
I think they got their timeline a little wrong here. 1987 World Wide Web? I don't think so. Was the first www was the first browser created by Tim Berners-Lee while working at CERN. Thought it maybe was like 92.
While he was working on it.
Started out with black and white with underlines under hyperlinks, which are still used today on modern websites. Yes, even the name, Tim Berners-Lee. It's blue and it has a hyperlink. And if you hover over it, the underline goes away. They are great solution for color blindness. Ta-da! So the hunt for who made it blue is we've now been able to narrow down the time frame. You know what? This is a very long article, and I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. They
There's
go
a
through
lot
Windows,
of information
Windows
in here.
3.0, 1991's Gopher Protocol, the 18-month wonder. 1991 HyperCard. It fit right between FTP and
I think
web.
Gopher was supported a lot longer than it was actually used.
I think it was around as long as the Pony Express, 18 months.
Yeah.
1992, Windows 3.1. 1992, the Linux kernel. 1993, Mosaic. Oh, this is, I remember all this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, CDE for the common desktop environment for Unix. That was nice when CDE came out on HPs. Netscape, the boring N, the flying stars. I still think one of the coolest Netscape, they called those things the throbber, you know, because you could see when something was loading. Yeah. The one that had the multi panes, I think it was either 0.9 or 1.0 something, where they had multiple like rectangles that sort of rotated around at the same time.
Yeah.
And they weren't going in the same direction or even at the same speed. That was the coolest one I ever saw. The little shooting stars one was neat too, but
yeah.
The boringest one, of course, was just the big N that went thoom, thoom, thoom.
Yeah, but I did like Netscape a lot more than I did Internet Explorer.
Oh.
I don't think I really ever, huh?
Yes?
I don't think I've ever liked really any version of Internet Explorer.
Amy says, this is one of the most interesting stories you've run on this segment. We'll try to make it more interesting to read next time.
Yeah. I mean, I went from the original Internet Explorer because that was really all you had.
Clinton says, spoilers. Yeah, Windows 1.0 is not a spoiler at this point.
No, he's talking about when we were talking about Garrick and stuff earlier.
Oh, okay. I thought he was talking about Windows 1.0.
No.
I hate this time delay thing between what we say and what you hear it, and then when you write it and when we read it.
Yeah. But anyway, I never really cared for an Explorer. I always used Netscape, and then I used Firefox and so on and so forth. I used Microsoft Edge.
The only thing you use Internet Explorer for is to go download Chrome.
That's right.
And sometimes I don't even do that as like wget.
Or just take the thumb drive and stick.
Okay, we have one more story about Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, it's really just a video. We don't have to talk about it too much. But it's a video. I think we may have featured it on the show before.
You
where
know,
he's...
Keith Lane could pull off an Arthur C. Clarke cosplay.
He could do some serious Arthur C. Clarke cosplay. But this is a video where the lady's doing an interview with him, and he is kind of describing, well, a lot of what we use today, you know, back then, back in 76. It's kind of interesting to see him. I knew that he is on the forefront of a lot of, at least some of the forward-thinking technology so that we use today, like Star Trek, him and Star Trek, right?
Yes, sorry, I'm typing back at Clinton. He's being a smart aleck as usual.
Yeah, I've never known him to do that. Yeah.
He said, Hindenburg coming in for a landing. Stand by.
Yeah.
I said, Lincoln's attending theater production tonight. News at 11.
Right.
And then we'd have to do the Walter Cronkite. President Lincoln.
Yeah. Take your glasses off.
Has been shot. He's dead.
Spoiler alert.
I'm watching this on replay. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. That takes us to the end of the show. Question of the week. What's an instance where the movie was better than the book? Oh, wow. That's assuming you have access to both and you've read the book and seen the same movie.
Well, hey, I read all the Lord of the Rings books before I saw the movies. They were different, so I wouldn't say one's better than the other, but they're both great in their own respects.
The visual effects on the movie were way better than the book.
Well, actually, you know, I read them a long time ago, but I read each one before each movie came out. And to me, a lot of what we saw on the screen was kind of in some way, what I imagined, you know, except for there was some time jumps that in the book, you know, the story takes place over a lot longer period, I think, than the actual movie does, supposed to. But anyway.
Well, I don't know. That movie takes about 3 hours anyway. So.
well, in the book, if I'm not mistaken, Gandalf leaves Bilbo originally after seeing the ring and comes back like years later. But in the movie, it looks like next week. You know, he shows back up. It's like
just
10
had
years
to run out to the
something.
Starbucks and get a coffee. Is it secret? Yeah. Is it safe? Are we still there?
I forget. Good. I forget how long it was in the book. It was like 10 years had gone by, and then Bilbo is supposed to remember. What were you gone for? You know, what were you doing? Anyway.
All right, that takes us to the end of the show. We've got our question of the week. We're going to record our Patreon show in just a few minutes, so that means I got to start that. And we're out of here. But if you want to get in touch with us till the next time we come around, and we will see many of you at Dragon Con next week. Our Technorama Comedy Forecast and Friends is on Sunday. We've got a audio theater sort of made easy on Friday. We've got Topic is Trek on Friday. We're going to squeeze in a karaoke session in there somewhere. If you're on one of our chat channels or you want to get in touch with us, DM us on Facebook. That whole friend thing in the app, I'm not
sure. By the way, you can send a message to Technorama Podcast on Facebook and it'll get to us.
Yes, or Technorama Podcast at chuckchat.com. Or call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. But there are many other ways. Let us know and we'll get in touch with you. All right. That noise in the background means it's time to say, give us a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Stay safe.